Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Harbor Group of RBC Dominion Securities Summer Marketing Market Conference Call. My name is Chris Newell. I'm one of the partners here at the Harbor Group, and I'm joined today by my colleague and our lead strategist, Robin Gullison. Earlier in the week, we experienced some very substantial market turmoil, and in response to this, we've sent out a piece that's entitled Summer Market Swoon that's also available on our website. And today we're going to walk you through some of the content and thinking behind the volatility that we've experienced within the market. And to change things up a little bit today, rather than have Robin present, we're going to do it in a little bit of a question and answer format, whereby I'll be asking Robin some questions around salient topics and perspectives and points of view that we've been soliciting from clients through feedback and communication. And we hope that you'll find this format useful. So the first question that I would ask, Robin, is this a correction or the start of something more meaningful?
I think that's a great question, Chris. I think that's what's on a lot of people's minds, given the fact that it's been a fairly steady ride for the U.S. market for the past few years, and there's obviously been a lot of turmoil in the last five, six, 7 years. We think that this is a normal correction. The circumstances of play today aren't quite the same as they were during the last recession. There's definitely some turmoil out there internationally, but we're not at a point like we saw 7 years ago when the global financial system was falling apart, the U.S. economy was in recession, we had all sorts of large bankruptcies and bailouts happening. None of that's really happening today. We think some of the action in the market is being exacerbated by forced seller, by leveraged investors. And we think some of the continued volatility is going to be out there because people will probably start doing their tax loss selling a little early, whether this is individual investors or mutual funds or hedge funds trying to manage their tax situations for their clients. We think that tax loss selling is likely to play a role. But in our view, this is a normal correction. Of course, it feels anything but normal as we're going through it, especially given the U.S. has had such low volatility for the past few years. But we don't think this is the start of anything more meaningful given how the economy is shaping up right now.
And Robin, is that a perspective that we're alone on, or is this something that the broader firm at RBC shares?
This is something that the broader firm at RBC shares. I think there's a publication on our website called Stormy Weather, something to that effect, which comes to a similar conclusion. I think the bottom line is that have the fundamentals changed in the major global economies outside of China, so in the U.S. and Europe, and the answer would be no. We look at what the growth perspective is for the U.S. It's still low in the kind of 2-2.5% range, but positive. Interest rates are still very low. We don't have tight money, which typically is one of the precursors of a recession in the U.S. If you look at the employment situation, we continue to see strong job growth, low unemployment, growth in manufacturing. Housing is becoming another tailwind again, which we haven't seen for quite a while, which is great. And if you look to Europe, even though it's a bit bumpy at times, the quantitative easing program there is having its desired effect. We just had data out of Germany that showed good GDP growth and strong business sentiment come out just today. So we think that the fundamentals in the major developed market economies continue to be good. They're not growing gangbusters, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, because typically when you get really strong growth, that's when inflation picks up, and that's when the central bankers really start to hit the brakes.
Your comments thus far have mostly pertained to the U.S. and Europe. What about Canada? Are the fundamentals here good, or is there something to be concerned about?
Canada is definitely a little more mixed. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody listening to this call, right? For the last few years, Canada's had this two-speed economy dominated by strong growth in Western Canada and weak growth in Central Canada due to a strong currency. And I think this two-speed growth economy is now starting to switch lanes. You're obviously seeing a lot of weakness in the oil patch and the commodity sectors, while we're looking for growth to return to the manufacturing sector. And unfortunately, that handoff tends to take a bit of time. The empirical work we've done shows that it takes about 3 years after a big currency depreciation for manufacturing to start picking up. And we're maybe 2 years into it. And I think the way it's going to work is that these large corporations that make investment decisions for manufacturing facilities aren't going to change their minds overnight. I think we're at the point now with the Canadian dollar being under fair value that we're probably going to see less manufacturing leaving Canada. And I think you need a couple more years of a weak currency so that these companies think that it's real, and then maybe you start to see the manufacturing come back.
So with all of this said, if we were to look at the collective economic output of the Canadian economy versus the U.S. economy, And for those of you listening on the call, we label collective economic output as an economic term called GDP, or gross domestic product. So, Robin, how different has the output, GDP, been between Canadian and the United States of the recent past? I'd imagine that it sounds as if it's going to be starkly different, given the fundamental backdrop that you've talked about. Has that actually been the case?
Well, funny you ask that. You know, we in the piece we put out called Summer Market Swoon on the second page, we have a long-term chart of Canadian and U.S. GDP growth going back to the 1960s. And I think if you took the labels off the chart, not many people would be able to tell you which country is which. And over the long term, Canadian and U.S. GDP have had a very strong correlation, despite the long-term trends in commodities or the U.S. dollar versus the Canadian dollar. They tend to move along with one another quite closely, given that we are both very large trading partners for each other. So this year, Canada is lagging the U.S. You know, people think Canadian growth is going to be in the kind of 1% plus range, U.S. in the 2% plus range. So a difference, but not all that material. And our view is we're not going to argue with over 50 years of history that the Canada and the U.S. tend to grow together. So if we continue to see growth out of the U.S., we think eventually it has to drag Canada along with it, specifically given the fact that our currency has weakened so much in the past few years.
Interesting. During the last market downturn in 2007 and 2008, which for many investors is still fresh in their mind, we saw some systemic risk that became embedded in the system. Are we seeing any of that type of risk manifesting in this market correction?
One of the things I watch the most for indication of systemic risk is the bond market. The one place where you can almost guarantee you have investors to turn when they're fearful is the long-term U.S. Treasuries. And the action in that market in the last couple of days has been quite encouraging to us in that long-term Treasury yields yesterday, when the market was down significantly, barely budged, and today Treasury yields were up about 10 basis points before we came in the room here. So to me, that tells you that investors are not necessarily clamoring for a risk-free asset or for a safe haven as they typically do. And that tells me that maybe some of the selling in the market is more technical in nature. So we had a very big option expiry on Friday. There was a lot of trading. I won't get into the details because it's quite technical, but a lot of different option positions. The hedges they were supposed to provide weren't working as designed, so people had to sell stock to make that work. So you saw a lot of technical action taking place. And I think if you look at yesterday, a stock like JP Morgan, for example, in the U.S., traded in a 25% range yesterday. I don't think there were any humans selling JP Morgan stock down 25% unless they had a stop loss order. I think there's a lot of algorithmic trading going on. That's really exacerbated the moves. I think this really came to prominence, obviously, during the flash crash in 2010. You had a similar thing happen in the Treasury bond market last year. I think it's likely we see more of this volatility driven by the algorithmic trading community, and that's not fundamentals. That's not even sentiment. That's just kind of computers doing their thing and working off their algorithms, and not something that's related to fundamentals. And it's just, you know, disheartening to see happen and can be a little bit stressful, but it's not reflective of underlying fundamentals, which is what I think we have to keep our eye on for the long term.
Interesting. So in the financial market, we oftentimes try and draw parallels between a current situation and a previous situation that we've seen historically. As we all know, history tends to repeat itself over and over again. What historical context can we look to as a signpost for the current environment that we're going through, if any?
I think the closest parallel people are going to try to draw, which I don't think is 100% accurate, but there is obviously some relations, would be the 1997 Asian financial crisis. And, you know, this is obviously emanating from the same area. You have China devaluing their currency slightly. You had a Chinese devaluation back in the mid-90s that kind of culminated, I guess, in the financial crisis in Asia. But back then, you had a lot of different things. You had national balance sheets in much worse shape for a lot of these Southeast Asian countries. They had pegged currencies to the U.S. dollar that were depreciated by 50%. You had countries like Thailand raising interest rates to extraordinary levels to try and protect the currency. At this point, these countries are a little more well-fortified with their foreign reserves. Their currency is already freely floating, so they are moving around, and it is volatile, but it's not like pegs are becoming unglued. So I think if anybody's going to draw a parallel, it'll be to the 97 financial crisis in Asia, but we don't think that this is necessarily a replay. It's maybe the closest historical comparable, but we don't think it's of the same sort of intensity.
So over the course of the year, we've talked an awful lot about the trajectory and the direction of interest rates. And in financial circles, you've seen a lot on CNBC or the business news. They talk about liftoff, and this is where the first time that the Federal Reserve, referred to as the Fed, when they will start to raise interest rates. So, Robin, in financial lingo, do you think this changes the Fed's perspective on liftoff?
I think it probably does. If, you know, if this were to right itself in the next week or so, then maybe it doesn't change. But the market's pricing of the Fed lifting rates in September, which had been the kind of overwhelming consensus, has definitely come off. The market has a small probability of a hike in September priced in at about 50% for a rate hike by year end. Now, the Fed seems pretty determined to raise interest rates, if for no other reason than they want to get off of zero and probably build some ammunition for the next time they need to be able to cut interest rates. But I find it hard to believe they will hike rates if the markets are acting like they are today come early September. I don't, you know, the unspoken part of their mandate, they have a dual mandate of maximum employment and stable inflation. The kind of unsaid third mandate is financial stability. And as much as the U.S. economy seems like it's ready for a rate rise, after all the work the Fed has done, after all the political hassle they've taken for going through the QE programs, I find it hard to believe they'd raise interest rates just because they feel they need to in the midst of volatile markets. The last thing they want to do is upend the stock market after all the work they've done to get us to where we are today. So this definitely lowers the probability of the Fed raising interest rates. But if for some reason, you know, things calm down in the next couple of weeks, then I don't think it's a zero probability at this point.
Okay. You know, given all of the wild volatility that we've had, you know, the next question that is on many investors' minds is this a normal correction? And if it is a normal correction, you know, is there any way that we can look at this in some form of a historical context to give us an idea of what do we expect and how should this unfold, both from a percentage or is the damage done or how long is it going to take? Robin, could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. As I mentioned in the opening comments, we do think it is a normal correction. Again, you know, over the long term, all but the truly nasty bear markets just look like a blip on the long-term charts. But when people, when investors are living through a correction, it doesn't feel normal. And, of course, it doesn't feel normal right now. And there's always a reason that seems scary at the time that seems to fade into the background. We've had the Euro debt crisis two or three times. We had things like the fiscal cliff in the U.S., the debt downgrade, Ebola last year, et cetera. But from our lens, the big question is, are we going to get a U.S. recession? Because that's typically what leads to bear markets, and that's not really on the horizon. So is this a normal correction? We replicated a table we put in one of our publications last fall. It's called How Corrections Play Out. It had data back to 1945. It goes through the different types of corrections, a mild correction, 5 to 10%, intermediate, down 10 to 20, or a bear market. And right now we're in what we call an intermediate term correction. So the S&P 500 from its peak is down about 11%. And there's been 19 of these corrections since 1945, and this one's playing out pretty close to the average. So of those 19 occurrences, the average decline is 14%. Again, we're down 11. Just to give you an idea, if the market were to retest the lows from last October, that would be down about 15, to give you a rough idea of what that would look like. Peak to trough in months is 4 months. The market peaked in May, so we're about 3 plus or minus months into it from the market peak. And the recovery is about 4 months after that. So right now, I wouldn't call it exactly a textbook correction because there are only 19 occurrences, but it's playing out fairly in line with how they have in the past. And now it's up to us to see, you know, what the actual bottom is and how the recovery plays out.
Interesting. I have a couple more questions. The first one is looking at valuation in the stock market. So, you know, invariably after you go through a corrective period of time, you look back and think to yourself, you know, is there something I could have done differently or thought about differently? You know, where are we from a valuation standpoint now? Are the markets trading at expensive valuation? Is this reasonable valuation? And perhaps a more constructive way to look at this is, with valuation currently looking forward, what sort of probability have we got for return?
Well, any correction in the market obviously is going to improve valuations. And one of the things we always look at is, are analysts still increasing their estimates for corporate earnings for the next year? Because that's really what a lot of the return, of course, is based on. Your return is going to be made up of three things: earnings growth, change in the PE ratio or sentiment, and dividends. So if we assume the PE ratio stays stagnant, because we're not going to try and predict what's going to happen there, we think it's relatively fairly valued. But if we think we're going to have earnings growth in the kind of 6-7% range and the 2-3% dividend, that sets us up for a potential high single-digit return. And we look at what the valuations are looking at next year's earnings. So again, analysts are still expecting earnings to grow next year. The TSX is trading at about just under 14 times next year's earnings. The S&P 500 is about 14.5, and the Dow is around 13 times, and the European market's about 12 times. So these valuations do seem quite reasonable, especially considering that interest rates are still low and not likely to go materially higher in the near term. And you also have low inflation, which again should suggest that you're not going to see a large move in interest rates. So we think the markets are fairly attractively valued now after being, you know, fairly valued a couple of months ago. And we don't really think the growth trajectory for profits has changed all that much despite what's happened in the pricing of the market.
Terrific. So if you were to leave us with just a few key takeaway points, now that you've articulated that this is, you know, a normal course correction and not the start of something more meaningful, you know, what would those key takeaway points be?
Well, I think the number one thing is a lot of people, when they have a correction, look to swing for the fences. They see stocks that are down a lot, and every correction has its story of some beaten down, highly leveraged stock that ends up producing an outsized return on the way back up. For every one of those stories, I'd say there's probably three or four that end in tears. So we're not necessarily looking to knock the ball out of the park here. We think our perspective is that high-quality securities are often the last to go down the least, and are typically the market leaders when conditions stabilize. So we think the most important thing now is patience, because in the heat of the moment, any decision to buy or sell in this kind of market is often met with regret. And we think our job as advisors is to keep everybody focused on their long-term goals and be a steady hand guiding people through turbulent markets. Not to say we aren't going to do any sort of trades. You know, a lot of securities that we think are very high quality and have good dividend growth prospects have become much more attractively valued, and some stocks we thought were expensive are now in areas where we think they're more interesting. But we're not going to make a hair trigger decision when the market is swinging around by 4% per day. We want to see things stabilize a bit and get an idea of where things play out. And we think patience plays a big role here. And lastly, you know, these volatile market conditions, we think, are going to provide investors with an opportunity with the potential to enhance their income in retirement, because a lot of dividend stocks have been hit pretty hard. So there are some pretty good yields available out there in equities, and even certain portions of the fixed income market have been cheapening up, which we haven't seen for quite some time.
Well, that's just terrific. And so, Robin, thanks very much for joining me in this call today. And to all of you who are listening, we very much appreciate the trust and confidence that you've extended to us in helping us manage your assets. And as good as a conference call is, or as good as the publications that we may send out to you, nothing beats direct communication. So, you know, if you've got something on your mind, we do encourage you to give us a call. We're here, and we'll be just absolutely welcome to receive your communication and make sure that we can help you through this this challenging time and volatile time in the stock market. So with that said, we would like to wish you a good day and enjoy the balance of your summer. Thank you.